Hey, I'm Tony Moreland, and this is POW, the Samsung Developers Podcast, where we chat with innovators using Samsung technologies, award-winning app developers and designers, as well as insiders working on the latest Samsung tools. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1. On today's show, I interview Dražen Stojšić, the super successful watch face designer behind the brand Urarity. Dražen is the 2020 Best of Galaxy Store Award winner for Best Watch Face Collection. Not only do we talk about his rise to becoming one of the top watch face sellers on Galaxy Store, but also his fascinating career path. And it all started when he became an award-winning author after writing his first novel at the age of 16. Enjoy. So I have to start by saying I am extremely excited to kick off the new season of the podcast with one of my absolute favorite designers, Dražen from Urarity.
Hi, Tony. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excellent. No, I am so excited to have you on the show. Let me first start by asking, who is Dražen Stojšić?
So, I guess I could say the basics. You know, I'm 38 years old. I'm from Europe, from Croatia. I am married and I've spent last 4 years designing watch faces for Samsung devices. And after a lifelong career in all sorts of media related stuff, I found myself in something that I really enjoyed doing. And it turned out I was pretty good at it. And so now 4 years later, I've received the award for the best watch face collection. And it's been like, you know, a crown after all that hard work and time and effort put into it.
So you're saying that if you started about 4 years ago doing watch faces, that means you pretty much started at the beginning of this whole opportunity for designers to create watch faces for Samsung. So tell me, like, how did you first learn about Samsung wearables and then ultimately designing?
So I think it's a similar story with most early developers. You know, we are all a bit of gadget freaks. And so I've had Samsung, the very first Samsung smartwatch was because I had a Samsung phone as well. And so when Samsung made their first wearable, I was like all over it. You couldn't customize it. You couldn't do anything. It was just a device that could like measure your heart rate and steps and some very basic stuff.
And it had a camera on it, correct?
And it had a camera on the wristband. Yes. And, you know, at that time, my whole life was around photography. And so having, you know, a camera on a wristband, that was like sports billy stuff. You know, I just, I loved it. And so when the new versions came out, obviously, I was upgrading, and at some point, a friend of mine who was my work colleague actually mentioned, you know, you're pretty good at design, and you have all this previous experience with. I had some experience with designing mobile apps for like 15 years ago for. Before even Android existed, you know, it was like the very first touchscreen phones that showed up, and I teamed up with a programmer, and we made a mobile keyboard. And so I was doing the graphics and the design, and he was programming it. And so he knew all this because we talked about it, and he said, you know, you have the watch. You have the knowledge. Why don't you try, you know, there's this cool software where you can just, you don't need to know programming because I'm not a programmer. And there's this cool software. You can download it and you can like make your own designs for your watch. And so I downloaded the Galaxy Watch Designer, and now it's a Galaxy Watch Studio. So, and I loved it. I loved it. Within a week, I had like watch face ready, and I want to publish it.
Yes.
And it just started from that, just, you know, pure luck.
Yeah, that's very similar to how I got my start. I mean, I attended this event at Samsung where they, you know, told everybody about
gear watch designer.
Yeah.
And came home that night and was so excited to be able to, in a sense, do programming without any coding. So I could use all my graphic design skills, but yet create this, you know, interactive watch face. I mean, it's just, yeah, I bought in real quickly to it. So I know that you've had quite the journey to get to the point where you are now as a watch face designer, doing lots of different, you know, jobs, but all within the same sort of family of everything related around media and whatnot. Yeah. So tell me how you got your start in design.
So, well, I guess I've always liked, you know, even as a kid, I had like these artistic tendencies. So I would like draw a lot and I would, paint, and I would write and do all sorts of stuff, you know. And so my first experiences were basically with computers, you know, and those were computers where you didn't even have an OS on them. I come from Croatia, which went through an armed conflict, a war in the 90s, and I was just a kid at that time. But after the war, my elementary school got a donation in computers. So none of the teachers had any experience with that. And us kids obviously never even seen a computer at that point. And so I think it was like a UN donation or some sort of a charity program. Okay. And so, yeah. And so they set up a classroom for us. It was like 15 or 20 of computers. And a teacher from arts and crafts was assigned to do something useful with those computers. And he was an older gentleman who didn't know English, who didn't know, it was just, you know, you figured this out. And so he asked kids in the school, was anybody interested? And I always was fascinated by technology. I think it was like four kids from the whole school that signed up for this. That was like first contact with computers. And everything I did later on was in some sense connected to IT, you know. I when I got my first home computer, I was just like drawing stuff all day, all the time. I was just like learning software, sketching stuff, making, I don't know, school newspapers, stuff like that. You know, everything was, you know, one thing and then the next thing. And so after high school, I was into music at that time. And so I ended up being on a local radio station. Yeah. And so because the station was part of like a network that had a newspaper and a radio and a TV station, I spent the next couple of years moving from one to the next. And so I moved from the radio where I worked as a DJ. And
so a DJ spinning music, I mean,
yeah, very, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I actually really did some like nightclub stuff. So I would work during the day on a radio station, and at night I would be working like cocktail bars. And
really, DJ Drazen.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's great. And so, and you know, this is all time before internet. So there's no internet at this point, and so obviously, being in a radio station gets you new music, and then you can, you know, use that music to put on parties. And so
there we go.
Yeah. So I was like using one job to make money on the side. And so, and then I moved to the newspapers where I worked as a journalist, because I always enjoyed writing.
And I think I heard that you actually received an award when you were much younger for you actually wrote
a I wrote a novel when I was 16 actually, and when I was 17 I got two major prizes for best first novel in Croatia.
Oh, that's great.
From like really respected, you know, people in Croatia who are basically, you know, top of the crops. And so that was also a push that led me into journalism eventually, right?
Sure.
And during my journalist days, I had a situation where a photographer that was supposed to cover a event with me, he couldn't make it, and there was no one else. And because at that time people from my newspapers already knew that I was like into computers, and I was like always chasing something. And so my editor said, you know, we just got these funny new digital cameras. Maybe you could pick one up and just take two shots. It'll be fine for the print. You know, just try to keep people in frame. You know, it was. And so that was my first experience with digital photography. And I was instantly in love with that. And so after that day, I would always ask that I take my own shots. And basically, I would take photos of what I'm supposed to, and I would spend the rest of the day shooting like anything I could find. And I would intentionally leave some of the photos that I thought that were good. I would leave them on the cart for the photo editors so they can see them.
They could see your work. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. And so after a while, I got a call from the photography editor, and it was all like this transitional period where they were moving away from film and classic film cameras into digital.
Yes.
And so he said, you know, are you leaving these photos on the cards? Because I kind of like them. And I said, yeah. Well, you know, I like this thing. You know, this digital photography seems to suit me. And within a month, I wasn't working as a journalist anymore. I just
really?
Moved on. Yeah, I just moved on to photography overnight.
Wow.
And so my photography work then, you know, I learned a lot of stuff from the more experienced photographers there. But I was also able to get on this train really early of this digital photography that was just coming. And a lot of older photographers had a problem with this. They couldn't adapt so well, so quickly. You know, it required working with software and all of that stuff that I basically was used to. And so a few years later, I partnered up with a very senior and well-respected photographer here in my town. And he had a big production company that was basically multimedia. We had like a video crews, we had CGI designers, we had sound crews, we had, you know, full multimedia production along with design. And so I did basically the same thing I did before I did here. So I would move from one to next position, and I just kind of learned along the way.
Sure.
I have no formal education in either of these things.
Yeah.
So it's all just learning from other people and learning on your own, trying to, you know, get something new. I had a desire to express myself, and so it was always something media related. And now
sure.
All of these things from the past, and especially, I don't know, there's a lot of, in my past, a lot of work with marketing. So working with marketing companies, with like production teams, and you learn what clients want, how they think, how all of this kind of came together and led into your rarity.
Yes. Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, I have to say, I'm extremely surprised to hear that you say that you don't have formal training.
Yeah.
But hearing about the experiences, all of the years and all these different areas that you've, you know, had an opportunity to work in, it really shows, because I think that's where your rarity stands out from many of the other watch face developers. It's all of the other assets that are required to be successful. You know, when you see your videos and your photography, you can tell that someone with excellent expertise is putting this together, because it's not just a computer rendition or a 3D model that's rotating. I mean, you actually are taking a camera on a dolly and yeah. doing rotation with it. And to me, that's what really stands out, because that's pretty unique to see from a developer, you know, marketing on a Samsung platform. It gives it such a realness, you know, exactly. where you actually see the product, and it gives confidence when you're thinking about, hey, should I make a purchase? So I think that is probably one of the biggest factors for your success when I see the work that you do.
I agree. And that's basically the whole logic. I started doing that right from the beginning, because I kind of knew that it wasn't enough to make just the watch face itself look good. So everything else needed to look at the same level.
Yeah.
So, and obviously over the couple of last years, I've advanced further, and my designs have become better, and my marketing materials as well. But the core idea is still the same. You know, you could make the best watch face ever.
Yeah.
But if your presentations is not good, it's just the customers won't get it.
Exactly. So I understand that Uverity is not just Drazen, that you actually have partnered with someone who has expertise in these areas of like social media and marketing and whatnot that's helping you. So tell me a little bit about the other person that is involved with Uverity's success.
So at first it was just me, and you know, for probably first 2 years I did all of the stuff on my own. But then as I advanced and as I got more and more customers and more of this whole production behind this, I realized that I needed help. And my brother, Domagoj, he just came fresh out of college that had marketing as one of the major classes in it. And so he knew about my watch faces, and he would frequently help me. He and I came up with the name Uverity.
Yeah, so tell me the history of how you came up with that name.
Yeah, so because my brother has this nick for coming up with funny names for stuff, and so we would frequently do that for like all sorts of things. We would like make up names for products or for companies, or find, you know, funny word plays and stuff like that. When I figured out that I needed a brand, that I couldn't just, you know, be just me, it needed a brand name. And so we're just talking about this. And so a lot of people think that your rarity is basically you and rarity, uh-huh. which it is, but the main idea behind it is basically because the first four letters of the word Uverity actually mean watchmaker in Croatian.
That is great.
Yeah. So we started from that. You know, it was like, because even today you could see like these shops around the town that had like this U-R-A-R. So it was just, you know, we're just making fun, and Uverity just popped up somewhere because I knew it would work well in English. Although it is a bit of a tongue twister, I still liked how it sounded and how it looked. And I liked this double meaning because it worked in our languages as well. And so he and I came up with this name. And then over time, he just kind of started helping me more and more. And at some point I said, okay, now I think you could probably handle a lot of this stuff better than me, because you actually do have an education for this. And so my brother has been helping me ever since. He's basically the whole marketing and customer support and all of that is his work. So I'm purely doing the creative stuff.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, it gives you an opportunity to really focus on your expertise and allow him to focus on his expertise. So is Uverity pretty much your full-time job?
Yeah, it has become over time. For a long period, I also did a lot of side jobs, but the pandemic changed a lot of that, because this is a job that you can do from the comfort and safety of your home.
Yes.
And my side jobs that were mostly photography related, basically they weren't there anymore when all of this started. And so for me, it was like the perfect job to do during these times where you had to stay at home a lot. I've actually used the opportunity to do a lot of the stuff that I would previously maybe put off. So I did a lot of housekeeping, you know, in the store, cleaned up the descriptions and all that stuff that usually you just, you know, you don't have enough time to do all of that. And I kind of fine tuned everything that we did. So for us, it's been a positive effect in that sense.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, there has been a lot of challenges during this past year for many people on all different areas. I will say you were not the first person who has said that, you know, this opportunity that Samsung has provided to developers, you know, really they're, you know, indie designers like yourself, you can still continue to work from your home where it is safe. So that's great.
Absolutely. And I mean, even before this, having the opportunity to work from home has been quite a refreshing change for me, because a lot of the work I did before involved a lot of traveling, a lot of staying out of home, which is, you know, it's great fun for a while. But then as you get older and, you know, you get a wife and a house and all of and a dog and all of that.
Of course.
You kind of just, you know, you prefer staying at home. It's not.
Yes.
A lot of people, you know, are thinking, oh, I don't want to stay at home. No, I'm fine. I'm not complaining.
So yeah, back when we were allowed to travel, that's actually when I first met you, because you came out to San Jose and attended our conference, SDC 19. So that was great to actually meet you in person. I was very aware of your work prior to that. So when I actually got to put a face to the brand, Urarity, that was a great moment for me. I was honored to meet you. So tell me about that. What was that experience like for you to come out to San Jose and get to actually see the Samsung people in person and also be at the conference?
I think it was probably the biggest milestone for me. It changed so much in terms of perspective of what this whole thing is about, because up until that point, I would have contacts with people from Samsung and from other developers as well, and I still do. But, you know, actually deciding to get on a plane and fly on to another side of the world and then be a part of this great event and the whole buzz and all of these people from all over the world, it was just eye-opening for me, because as many developers or better to say designers in Galaxy Store, I don't have a lot of experience with these tech conferences. And so, you know, coming to San Jose, meeting people from Samsung, meeting other developers, having a talk with them and just exchanging, you know, opinions and ideas. And I loved it. That's it. You know, I want to do this for real now. I think that was the point where it shifted in my head that, okay, this is serious stuff. And there's a great support from Samsung, which it always was there, but just putting a face to the name of all these various contacts that I had, it just made all the difference.
And I have to say, one of the highlights for me was sitting in a room with who I thought were the rock stars of the designers. I mean, here I was, you know, chatting with you, and next to you was Matteo Dini, and then Bergen, and Tomas from Vienna Studios. And I'm like, oh my gosh, man, these are the designers that are just making incredible watch faces on the store. And we're all in this one room together, just, you know, having great conversations. So it was wonderful to be able to meet face to face with many of these top designers.
Absolutely. And I especially enjoyed talking with you. I think it was one of the best conversations I had there. You know, it just, I think we clicked really early on, and
definitely
you have two perspectives on the whole thing. You started as a designer and now you're in Samsung, so you can kind of relate better to the stuff that we're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. That was one of the main reasons why I took the position. And I think one of the main reasons I got the job was that Samsung really wanted to have someone with that voice internally, so that I could be the liaison between taking the suggestions and the challenges that the designers have and trying to give a route to solving some of those issues and making the platform even better.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, this year, we couldn't have the conference because of the pandemic. As many people know, we did an online award show, and I was absolutely honored to be a part of the team that awarded you the best watch face collection. And, you know, without a doubt, your collection just is amazing. You know, I still look at the animated watch faces you do. I see the videos that you put behind your watch faces as far as the production goes, and you are clearly deserving of this top honor. So tell me, how did you first learn that you were winning this award from Samsung?
Okay, so first of all, it was really an awesome thing, you know. I was just blown away by the fact that I got the award. I never really expected that it, when I started making watch faces, that it would end up in me getting some sort of an award for this, or making all of this success that has happened in the past years. Actually, how I found out was because I got this strange email that said, you know, just to notice that there will be an online event at this time and date, and let's stay in touch. I mentioned this to Matteo Dini. You know, did you see there's going to be an online event? And, you know, he said, I didn't get any email about this. And he was the winner last year. He said to me, oh, wait, I know what this is. You probably won an award. So I basically found out about this from Matteo.
That's funny. I want to kind of go back a little bit and let's talk about your actual workflow when it comes to designing watch faces. What is the first thing you do? Are you grabbing a pencil and a piece of paper and starting to sketch? Do you just dive right into the computer?
I think it really depends. Sometimes I will just get an idea from a totally random spot. Like one of my most successful watch faces, the inspiration for it came from a blue glow around an elevator button that I just liked.
And which watch face is that?
It was the Pulse series.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was in this elevator and it was like some hotel, and there was this button that was beautifully glowing, like pulsating blue. And I was just looking at it and I loved it. And so I wanted to use that glow and have the similar effect on a watch. So I came home and I started up After Effects, and I made this blue ring that was glowing, but it just wasn't working, you know. And so I started playing with motion, and then I figured out that it'd be cool if it looked like it was coming out of the screen, like it was slowly moving out to the edges. And so I had this thing, and there was no watch hands, no numbers, nothing else, just this pulsing thing, and I loved it.
So you've created this glowing, really cool animation. What's the next step? I mean, you've got to be able to turn this into a watch face. So are you just playing around with different shapes to create the, you know, the form?
Because most of our watch faces are animated. I would do the animations and then I would just grab one screen from the animation series. And then I would start like playing in just pure 2D, trying to figure out, what can I do? Where could I put some of this info? How is stuff going to work one with another? Where are the watch hands going to be? Is this going to be a digital watch face?
Sure.
Or an analog watch face? Is it going to have like a lot of info or not a lot of info? And so it's going back and forth. So I would sometimes start with an animation and then edit it 15 times over until everything fits one with another. And it's just, it's really a tedious process once you start complicating things with animations, and animations do complicate things.
Yes.
Immensely. You know, I sometimes envy designers that can make really awesome watch faces that are not animated, because I kind of don't know how to do that.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also funny when they tell me, oh, you can make all these awesome animations. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you don't have to make them and you still make awesome watch faces.
At that point, are you using Illustrator or Photoshop?
Yeah, I use a lot of software. So I will use basically the whole Adobe package. So everything from, you know, Premiere, Photoshop, Illustrator. And I also use 3D software like cinema 4D or even SketchUp for some of the stuff, you know, if I just want to make a quick idea to see how it works. It's just a whole bunch of stuff, you know, various softwares that I'm used to from before, you know, that I'm used to from my previous work. So it's not like one thing, you know. I'm sure people could do just fine using probably one serious graphic software, but because of the animations, it's just not enough. You need to have like all this other stuff too.
Of course. Just to mention, we both are very familiar with Tomas Joscek from Vienna Studios. Still astounds me. And if you haven't listened to this podcast, go back and listen to it. I'll let you in on a little secret. Tomas uses PowerPoint to create his design. So when I hear you talk about, you know, all the complexity of creating these animations, and, you know, truthfully, you know, you have to become somewhat of a pro with Photoshop and Illustrator really to leverage all of the tools in there.
Yeah.
To hear that Tomas uses PowerPoint, I know that you were as surprised as I was.
I was blown away. I met Tomas for the first time at SDC, and we had a really nice time talking. And so naturally we came to the talk about software, and you know, and he said, "You're never going to guess what I'm using to make my watch faces." And I was thinking, maybe he's using, like, I don't know, some GIMP or something like that, some of the free graphic software or something more simpler. And so when he said PowerPoint, it blew me away, because, and this is what I was talking about, so there are developers that can make really awesome, successful watch faces with software that wasn't even intended for this use.
Correct.
And they can have great success.
Yeah.
So it's just so awesome. And I have huge respect for what he does. And I totally recommend also listening to that podcast. It was so cool.
I will say one thing that you guys have in common would be the photography after you've created the watch face. So just like yourself, Tomas is doing real video recording of his watch faces. You can see his gloved hands come onto screen and do all the tapping interaction on his face. So again, it's extremely important to find your unique way to showcase your work. And both you and Tomas have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tomas, especially because he is he makes premium, like high end premium watch faces that aren't basically like for general public. And so him using the gloves and having all of these nice backdrops and everything, it just sort of fits within the brand and with the whole identity and everything that he does. And so I start making videos, and I started right from the get-go because I realized that people needed to see this thing in action because it was animated. I also wanted to set up like some of the basic standards, how I'm going to do this, what's going to be the approach. And so most of my videos are like have colorful lighting and a lot of motion. They're always in motion. I don't make static videos because that's also something I wanted to emphasize. The animations give a lot of motion to the watch faces. And so the videos are kind of like even more emphasizing that. So there's this, you just need to figure out what is the main point, what are you trying to do with your designs, and then have that same idea taken from the watch face to the screenshots, to your app description, to your videos, to your online social media. It just all needs to tie into one nice bow, and then it works.
Definitely. I would say another thing that really stands out for me when I think of the brand Urarity is color. You do not shy away from color. I can tell that you must spend a great amount of time thinking about color. I know we're on a podcast and you can only hear us at this moment, but I can actually see you. And right now your background in your room is changing in color. You must have some sort of LED lighting that just... So yeah. Tell me about color and how important it is to you, because I can tell it is a big factor.
Yeah, it is. It is. And actually, you know, funny thing you notice about the background, because I would frequently set up my room lights to go with the with the colors on the watch face that I'm working on.
That's great.
Or sometimes I will just like use these. I have these cool LED lights that you can customize and all of that remotely. And sometimes I will just like mix these colors in real life and just see what fits, you know, what works. And a lot of it helps me having experience in photography. You learn what colors work one with another, how brightness functions, how do we perceive brightness on a screen. It's kind of like when you are framing the shot for the photograph, it's not that different from setting up various elements on the screen, because you're still trying to get that golden ratio where intuitively programmed to like certain shapes and certain forms and certain ratios and certain colors as well.
Yes.
And so depending on the mood, I guess, I'm trying to make, or the effect that I'm trying to get, I will use a lot of color, or I will use muted colors. And sometimes I don't think a lot of people notice it, but not all of my watch faces have like black backgrounds, although they look like they do. Yeah. They have a slight tint, and it could be just the tiniest amount of maybe blue or green in it. And for me, it makes all the difference. I spend huge amounts of time with color. I don't stop until I'm perfectly satisfied. And now having my brother in all of this, a lot of the times I will be happy and he will say, I'm not so sure. I think you need to change this. And then I would spend another week changing colors. So it's a long process. It's not, you know, you don't do it in one night.
I loved hearing what you said just about black, that truthfully black is not just black. You can have warm black, you can have cold black. And so I often do that where I'll use the color picker in Photoshop. And, you know, if I've done my design, I'll try and find the sort of the feel of the face, what's the tone of it. And I'll sample that. And then within color picker, I'll go down to the almost to black, but it has just a little bit of hint of that, whether it's like an orange or a blue or something, because that then, like you said, it ties in that background. The foundation of the watch face still picks up what feels like that ambient lighting from the other elements.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I take a lot of time perfecting my watch faces. And that's why, I guess, that's why I don't make a lot of them. You know, I'm not like this super producer. I don't make like 100 watch faces a year.
Yeah.
It's always maybe 10 or 12 or 15.
So how many total would you say you have available in the store?
Yeah, so at the moment I think we have around 100 or 110.
Okay.
I've made a lot more actually in these 4 years, especially in the beginning. I would make a lot of I think a lot of developers go through this. They will just churn out, just bump, yeah, bump. But after a while you see that it's just, it doesn't make sense. It's better if you hold back, you know, let it sit for a while, get everything polished to the very last detail. And then once you're totally satisfied, then you publish.
Yeah.
And so as time goes on, I'm more focused on making the watch faces as perfect as they can be rather than getting them out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And I think that also what comes into play is the support that comes around that watch face. So what you have to do from a marketing standpoint, all of the different, you know, elements that are key to successfully marketing your watch face. If you have hundreds and hundreds, it's hard to maintain that. This way, it sounds like you can focus on, you know, a smaller collection, but still be able to then put a lot of time into the marketing side of things.
Exactly. The more watch faces you have, the bigger problem you have down the road when it comes time to update, and eventually it does. So I really think that this is a situation where you need to think about not the quantity, but rather the quality, because in the end, the customers also recognize this. You know, if they see you made 300 watch faces in a year, and a year has 365 days, you know, you're not sending the right message. And I will frequently go and be very critical of my own work. And so after a while, I see a bunch of mistakes I did, or I'm not totally satisfied with some of my older work, and I will just remove it. I will just take it down, clean up the portfolio, polish it. So when a customer comes, you know, they only see the very best, yeah. or at least the very best for this moment that I mean, you know.
Of course, yeah. So would you mind sharing how many downloads total does your rarity have?
So we're close to 700,000 downloads now.
Wow.
Oh, stretched over a period of 4 years. And a large part of this was paid watch faces, or, you know, I don't know the exact percent, which was some of them were free, and we will frequently use free watch faces to promote, or other things that we'll do. For example, in terms of marketing strategies, we will frequently do like buy one, get one.
Yes.
And stuff like that, you know, where a customer still gets a free watch face, but, you know, we also turn them into a paying customer as well.
So let me ask you, how do you approach that? Does the customer have to show proof of purchase? What's your approach to that?
So we ask them to either show us a screenshot from their store, or sometimes we'll like be fine if they can just show a photo of their watch with our watch face on it, or things like that. You know, any proof is fine. We're not really playing detectives here or anything.
Yeah.
So on one hand, we want to give something for free. On another hand, and a lot of these customers are our returning customers.
You know,
they are familiar with our watch faces and with our system, and we know a lot of them over the years. There's really been customers that have supported us right from the very start.
What's your approach with marketing on social? Are you doing much in the way of that?
When I started with Watch Faces, my main kind of venue was YouTube. Because of the animations and all of that, I just needed a video service that could, you know, show the Watch Faces in action. So I was building up this YouTube channel for a long time. And then after a while, I also started doing Facebook and Instagram. But it takes time. It really does. And I didn't really realize how much it can be useful until my brother took over and started doing it like for real.
Sure.
You know, he had only this one thing to focus on. For example, our YouTube channel is close to 2 million views now.
Wow.
And we only have our watch face videos.
Yes.
So that does kind of tell you a lot. There's a lot of things that you can do to promote your watch faces. And so over time, we've also teamed up with some of the more popular tech channels, or people who are doing watch face reviews, or who have an interest in this. And so we would team up with them, have them promote some of our work, give some of coupons for free,
sure,
or something like that, some discounts, stuff like that. And Facebook has also been very, very good for us. Instagram, and you know, I my brother does so much stuff that some of it even I don't know. You know, he's like doing stuff on Reddit, on forums, on TikTok,
really?
All over the place. Yeah, and I really don't mess into this, so I gave him like free rein to do as he thinks, because obviously, this is something that he does and knows better than me.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. And I'm sure across all of this, you're leveraging Galaxy Store badges. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we were actually a part of the Galaxy Badge pilot program. And so quickly, we kind of got this additional step into our workflow. So we will use both individual badges for like certain watch faces, but we are also frequently using our main badge that leads to our whole portfolio, because And as you mentioned, you know, I think we have a strong portfolio. So sometimes the first thing they see is the whole layout, everything we've done. So, and it's been very useful in terms of, you know, following the clicks and all of that, the statistics. And there's a lot of science in this, I guess. It's very interesting when you start analyzing the data that you can get from these badges and clicks and all, and seeing what works, what doesn't.
Yeah.
Because obviously you're trying to maximize the effect. You're not going to spend time or money or effort into something that doesn't work.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me, what is in the future for Urarity? Is there anything that we can anticipate?
Well, so as I mentioned before, we had a lot of success with our mechanical watch faces that have these highly customizable appearances. And so for the last couple of months, I've been toying with this idea of trying to do the same thing, but with digital watch faces. And getting that same wow effect for customers that, you know, sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Right, great. I just have like two phones going off. Unbelievable. So, just today I got my new, the 21 Ultra.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah. I just arrived this morning. And so I like 10 minutes before we started this, I had to transfer all of the data and settings from my old phone.
Of course.
And one of the things that it transferred was also the alarms.
Oh.
And so I switched off the alarm at the old phone, but I totally forgot about the new one. And so that's what went off now.
Oh, that's too funny.
Right. So
you were talking about in the future doing some animations with digital.
Yeah. So I mentioned before that we had huge success with our mechanical watch faces that had really customizable appearances. And so for the last couple of months, I've been playing with this idea of repeating that same thing, but with digital watch faces. And it may seem like it's a simple transition, but actually it's not. And it has its own unique challenges because making digital watch faces is a completely different idea behind it, and different visuals, and it just needs a different approach. And so I'm kind of messing with that. I'm trying to find the best thing that I think it will be like good first watch face to try and repeat that same success.
Sure. That's exciting to hear, because I would love to see that Urarity face in a digital form. So super excited to know that we can anticipate that. So before we close off this interview, you know, I have to say your English is amazing. You're from Croatia, but you speak perfect English. I know there's a little story behind how you learned to speak English. Can you share that?
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned before, you know, we had this war thing here when I was a kid. And so during the war, it's not that different from the pandemic, you know.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time indoors. You know, you can't go out, you can't play, you're a little kid. And so it just coincided with this period where we got like first cable TV. And so before that, there was like three channels all in Croatian language, and that was it. And then, you know, we got like this cool things like CNN and Cartoon Network and all of that stuff. And I didn't know a word of English other than, you know, seeing some of the movies and stuff like that. And so I was just like, I would watch hours and hours of this. And a cool thing was that it was subtitled. So, yeah. And so just, you know, listening to the words and seeing the translation below, it just helped so much, you know, with the meaning and with the phrases and with the correct pronunciation and all of that stuff. And then later on came the computers. And with the computers, eventually there came a period where I did a little bit of online gaming. And then you would talk to people from all over the world. And then you just had to, you know, you got to start speaking. And I would frequently talk to people from the US or from England or even people from other parts of the world. And, you know, English was always something I enjoyed, and it just fit so perfectly. And because I travel a lot, it's also proven to be really useful for me.
Yeah, of course. So what you're saying is that you learned English by watching Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great. Hey, Drazen, it's been excellent to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, and much luck in the new year.
Thank you for having me. And just, you know, I'm very, very happy and honored to be on the podcast. I always enjoy talking to you, and I hope that this year an SDC will be possible and that we will meet in person.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
Not just with you, with other developers too. You know, I really missed seeing them, you know, last year.
Yeah, no, it'll be great to get everybody back together.
Exactly.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, Drazen.
Thank you, Tony.
Looking to start creating for Samsung? Download the latest tools to code your next app. Or get software for designing apps without coding at all. Sell your apps to the world on the Samsung Galaxy Store. Check out developer.samsung.com today and start your journey with Samsung.
The PAL Podcast is brought to you by the Samsung Developer Program and produced by Tony Moreland.